Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today. Headline from The Guardian reads, Christian leaders unite to issue stark warning over climate crisis. Christian leaders indeed, Pope Francis, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and the leader of the Orthodox Church, all together making statements like, we face a profound injustice. The people bearing the most catastrophic consequences of these abuses are the poorest on the planet and have been the least responsible for causing them, talking about climate change. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about a statement by Pope Francis and other religious leaders on climate change, Dr. Cal Beisner. He's founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation and author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. Dr. Beisner, welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back with you.
What is this conference, COP26?
The COP stands for Conference of the Parties, and this is the 26th such conference. The parties are the various nations that are members of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, or UNFCCC. And the conferences of the parties that come every year, except that last year it didn't happen because of COVID and all the lockdowns, are for the purpose of trying to advance increasing understanding, increasing commitments of countries around the world to efforts to mitigate, to slow down human-induced global warming.
What is the current state of the climate crisis according to groups like COP26?
Well, according to groups like COP26, the climate crisis is indeed a huge crisis. It threatens massive loss of biodiversity around the world, rapidly rising sea levels that could displace vast portions of humanity that live close to sea level along the coasts. It threatens increased numbers and intensities of severe weather events, such as hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, droughts, heat waves, even cold snaps are threatened by this, all sorts of things. That's kind of the general picture. It's important to notice, though, by the way, that kind of catastrophist language and that kind of catastrophist picture just doesn't occur in the technical contents of the what's called the assessment reports that the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is partly under the UNFCCC, puts together periodically. And the first volume of the sixth such assessment report, the volume on the physical evidence, has no such catastrophic sounding language and frankly doesn't have scientific facts in it to back up such catastrophic language. So that kind of language comes in press releases from the United Nations. It comes in statements by political leaders around the world. It comes certainly from a lot of the environmental activist organizations. And then it gets picked up by the media. But there isn't really good scientific basis for it, even in the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change itself, let alone in what I would consider to be less biased research by other outstanding climate scientists.
Pope Francis, the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, and the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, say in part in this statement in advance of COP26, we are already witnessing the consequences of our refusal to protect and preserve the planet. Now, in this moment, we have an opportunity to repent and to turn in resolve to head in the opposite direction. We must pursue generosity and fairness in the ways that we live, work, and use money instead of selfish gain. What are they saying there, and how do you respond?
Well, it's very difficult, really, to determine precisely what they are saying in substance. And those are some fairly broad abstract terms, but they don't really specify, they don't quantify things. When we come, for instance, to the notion that we're already suffering the effects of human-induced climate change, global warming, the empirical observations, as distinct from climate models, computerized climate models, the empirical observations show no upward trends in any extreme weather events, hurricanes, floods, droughts, heat waves, cold snaps, wildfires, anything like that. There is no upward trend in any of those. And in fact, for some of them, there's a downward trend during the very period that supposedly we've seen the most rapid warming, particularly for hurricanes, for example. The empirical evidence also indicates that pretty much all of these things run in cycles of various different lengths and overlapping cycles. So there just simply is no evidence that any of these are becoming more problematic. Now, we're losing more property to such things, but that's because there's more property in their way as we make more property. Excitingly, though, the percentage of global GDP destroyed by such things in any given year has been falling, not rising, because global GDP and global property, global capital, has been rising much more rapidly. And the death rate from such things has dropped by well over 99% in the last 100 years. And that's because we're better and better at protecting ourselves from extreme weather events. The best news about all of this is that insofar as we have seen some warming, it's happened primarily toward the poles, primarily in winter and primarily at night, meaning we're raising low temperatures, but not doing much to high temperatures. As a result, there are fewer cold snaps, which kill about 20 times as many people per day as heat waves. And we have longer growing seasons and can farm farther north and farther south, which is all good news.
So why do climate change apologists benefit from a religious endorsement of their ideas, including, I should mention, a planned visit by Pope Francis to COP26?
Well, let's see. We could start with having a place at the table. You know, C.S. Lewis wrote about the temptation for all of us to want to be part of the inner circle. And I think that's what we really are seeing an awful lot of religious leaders get by jumping on this bandwagon. They also, I think, tend to actually be misled as to the actual scientific evidence. That's not surprising. It's really, really difficult to get good science on this. Most of what we get from the UN is propaganda. Most of what we get from politicians and from environmentalist activist organizations is propaganda. It takes really hard work to get the solid scientific evidence.
So what are the objective scientific facts about climate change, apart from, as you say, the propaganda and the wild interpretations of our lawmakers and in some cases, even our religious leaders?
Well, let's see. When this first volume of the latest UN report came out, it's 4,459 pages. So summarizing all of that real quickly here would be a little difficult. But I think I can give some basics. Yes, global average temperature at the global surface of the Earth, and in the lowest part of the atmosphere has probably risen about 1 to 1.2 degrees Celsius since about, say, 1880. That's been very much to the good because it has, in fact, lengthened growing seasons and diminished cold snaps and allowed for much more reliable agriculture and so on. It is quite likely, I'd say almost for sure, that human emissions of carbon dioxide and a little bit methane and a few other greenhouse gases have contributed to the warming significantly since about 1960 or thereabouts, possibly even the majority of the warming since about 1960. But that too is minuscule by comparison with the entire temperature scale that we're talking about. I mean, in degrees Kelvin, Kelvin starts at zero as absolute zero, the coldest you can get. 0 degrees Celsius, which is freezing, is 273 degrees Kelvin. You have to go up another roughly 20 degrees Kelvin to reach 15 degrees Kelvin to reach global average temperature. When we're talking about a change of 1.5 degrees, 2 degrees Celsius or Kelvin in global average temperature, that's out of 288 degrees. That's a minute percentage. It's far less than 1%, far less than 0.5%. As a result, we just simply don't have catastrophe to look forward to.
And finally, do you think that this will have the effect that at least the COP26 people believe it will? Basically, a public endorsement of the climate change propaganda. What effect do you think it will have with about a minute here?
Well, I think it's going to impress a lot of people that there is a moral case for what the UN wants to do. I don't think ultimately it's going to have any significant effect on public policy. I do want to raise real quickly one other issue, and that is that they're talking about this as a justice issue. I agree. It is a justice issue. What the UN and what the Framework Convention on Climate Change want us to do is to adopt energy policies that impoverish and trap people in poverty today who are very, very poor compared with the people we're supposedly protecting at the end of this century, who will, even in what are today the poorest countries of the world, be 5, 10, 15, 20 times better off than the people of today. So in other words, we're talking about a huge transfer of wealth from the poor of today to the far less poor, indeed to the wealthy of tomorrow. We're asking the poor of today to sacrifice for the rich of tomorrow. And I think that's quite unjust.
Dr. Cal Beisner is founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. He's author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. You'll find a link to this book and to the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. Beisner, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
When we come back, it's part three of our series on the theology of worship. Pastor Peter Bender will be our guest. We'll get into what God is doing in the divine service and how we continually return to the central function of the liturgy and hymnody, and that is to teach the faith centered in Jesus Christ.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we continue our trek through St. Mark with the woman with the issue of blood, raising of Jairus' daughter, rejected at home, sending the apostles, and the death of the Baptist, part one. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.